Welcome to Healthcare Aptitude, where healthcare's thought leaders will examine ways to address the rising costs of care in America. We'll also examine how the latest advances in mobile apps are helping hospitals and health systems bend the cost curve and improve patient engagement.
Welcome to Healthcare Aptitude. I'm Tom Testa, along with Bruce Kennedy. And Bruce, I feel 2021 has been a great year for Healthcare Aptitude, for the guests we've had. And that string is definitely going to continue this month, as we've got another great show in store for our listeners. In just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Les Jordan, Chief Product and Strategy Officer at Mobilesmith Health.
Yeah, Tom, it's been a really challenging year for healthcare so far, 2020 and 2021, but it's been a banner year for our ability to get really great guests on.
Right.
And I'm going to totally admit here that I'm completely biased. I get to work with Les every day, and I enjoy him and his time greatly and his impact on Mobilesmith. Today's discussion is going to really center around some of the work that Les developed almost right coming in the door. Les developed an amazing white paper for us that is published in Becker's Hospital Review. And the focus is on the triple threat that we're facing right now and how mobile apps can boost productivity, revenues, and patient engagement. So given the times we live in, we felt it was an amazingly timely piece of work and really looking forward to talking with Les today about that.
Great. And you know, we want to really get into things with Les now, but for our listeners, we will share the link and where they can get that white paper later on in the show. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, we want to bring in Les right now. It's time for the man of the half hour in this case. Welcome to the show, Les.
Well, I'm very happy to be here today. So I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Excellent. Well, we'd love if you could share a little bit about the impressive background that you have and that you bring to Mobilesmith Health, and even a little bit about what you do kind of in the day-to-day work here at Mobilesmith Health.
Sure. So most of my career has been in the health and life sciences space, with a good portion of it spent particularly in the intersection of health and life sciences, which is around clinical trials. And I've helped launch a software company that focused on clinical trials. I was the CTO for Microsoft's life sciences industry unit for a number of years, and have worked in for CROs, contract research organizations, and others. You know, my real passion is around patient engagement and has been for about 15 years now, and the ways that we can use technology to positively impact patient experience, how we can get patients more engaged in their health. Those are all things that I've been really passionate about, as I said, and really focused on through most of my career.
Les, you began to walk down the road there at the end of what seemed to be the genesis for your white paper. Give our listeners a sense of why you chose the triple threat focus that you did.
Yeah, you know, so we live in an interesting time. And with COVID and, you know, the negative impacts that COVID had on the healthcare organizations, on many healthcare organizations, especially hospitals, with elective surgeries being down as much as 50, 60%. Hospital operating margins are down close to 60%. As a result, you know, it became an interesting nexus point for being able to drive telehealth. So we saw this interesting time where we had customers and hospitals that were reducing their footprint around bringing in elective surgeries and doing things with patients in that regard, but really bolstering and boosting their telehealth presences and being able to interact with patients in that way. So this was a real boon in patient engagement and directly engaging patients through technological means as opposed to just straight face-to-face interactions. That was what was driving the white paper. How can organizations use technology to overcome some of the cost issues that they're facing, while at the same time, better serve their patient population that's going through this pandemic? And I think the advances that we've seen in telehealth are going to go beyond when this pandemic is over. And we're going to see these things, you know, persist for a longer period of time.
You know, there have been a number of recent pieces written about the increased use of technology due to remote patient health management systems and telehealth. And I think one of the questions in the back of everyone's mind is, when the pandemic is over, will we go back to the same deck of solutions, or has this truly advanced a hospital's digital maturation or evolution? Or when the pandemic gets more manageable, will we see, you know, kind of a retraction into our old standard ways of delivering care?
Yeah, and I don't think that's the case. I don't think we're going to go back to the way things were completely. And the reason that is that the digital adoption rate amongst the patient population has really increased. So if we think about the adoption of smartphone technology as a for instance, you know, a couple of years ago, we were talking about smartphones had adoption rates of 50, 60%. But now we're talking an adoption rate, you know, Pew Research just came out with numbers about a month ago in February, in fact, and they're saying that the smartphone adoption rate in the US is at 85%, and that's across all demographics.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive. And if you think about it, just a matter of a few years ago, back in 2016, you know, that was only a 70%. So we've seen in the last 4 years, another 15% increase in adoption of smartphone technology. So if that's the case, then hospitals, providers would be well served to serve the population where they are. And where they are is living on their smartphones.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And just to expand on that too, you know, you were talking about those impressive numbers, 85%. That is pretty much almost everyone having a smartphone in their hand. But I think it also relates back to, I don't know if you both agree with just consumer sentiment. So not only do I think the hospital should stick with it, but I think consumers are going to expect this kind of technology and this kind of service, especially because this helps with sort of the contactless side of things, which a lot of consumers are going to expect, I think, as we move beyond the pandemic.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely right. You know, the interesting part of that is, you know, that 85% is, while that's across all demographics, mm-hmm. you would think, well, there's, you know, maybe people that are older might not have smartphones, but even the smartphone adoption rate of the 65 plus area is still over 60%. So we're talking 60%, even in the older demographics. And when you skew younger and look at the younger, then it's close to 100%. So people are going to expect to be interacted with in the way that they interact with the world. And that's through their mobile devices now.
So Les, clearly there's been a surge in digital consumerism. We've seen upticks in that, and the data that you point to just drives that home. I think, you know, in healthcare, we've always had that concern about older, underserved populations being as adept in using some of the more advanced technologies on their smart devices. And I wonder if you had any thoughts about kind of that underserved community, older population, those that might typically struggle with perhaps some of the more advanced functioning on their phone in terms of app utilization and deep app adoption.
Mm-hmm. There's two types of evidence here. You know, one is anecdotal, which I'll share with you some anecdotal evidence. And the second is the hard numbers. So, you know, from the hard number standpoint, as we mentioned earlier, we're seeing, you know, Pew Research in their most recent data published in February showed that 61% of adults over the age of 65 have a smartphone, not just a cell phone, but a smartphone, and interact with their world in that way. So we're seeing, even amongst the older populations where there's been a slower uptake adoption of, you know, smart and mobile technologies like that, we're seeing, you know, a majority of adults having the ability to interact with their world in a smartphone fashion. So that's the hard data. On the soft data side, you know, from an anecdotal standpoint, you know, I interact, and my wife and I interact with our parents through Facebook Messenger. And it's done, you know, they do it on a tablet, and that's just how we interact. And it's easiest for them to interact in that way. So text messaging, Messenger, you know, other technologies of that ilk are becoming more and more adopted, even by the older generations that have a slower uptake of technology. So it is interesting, even in the hard data, that we see that that's reflected there as well, that we're seeing that type of adoption of technology. And that really does get into patient engagement, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because the more that we have technology adopted by a broader range of people, the more we can start to, from a healthcare standpoint, we can start to engage with patients in that manner. And that can start to drive all sorts of things. We could get from there into patient adherence. Patient adherence is a really hot topic. Remote patient monitoring, chronic care condition monitoring and management. There's all sorts of areas that we can go into now because that technology is widely adopted throughout the population.
So you bring up a great point, Les, and you're right. Once we get into that space of, let's say, 85% smartphone or mobile phone adoption rates, then we can differentiate the patient journey, right? We can, because we are getting into deeper levels of patient engagement capability, right? And so that opens up a whole realm of benefits. One, certainly, that we play in as a company is that whole space of adherence. Mm-hmm. You know, telehealth is not new, though, right? You know, telehealth has been used for quite a bit. What stopped telehealth historically from being able to be more of an adherence vehicle? Was it just the adoption rate, or was it the way that hospitals were thinking about telehealth or remote patient management capabilities?
I don't think people were really thinking about remote patient management. I think they were thinking about telehealth. And when you first thought about telehealth, most people were thinking about video visits and interacting with providers in that way. And certainly in the COVID era, we have seen a boom in video visits and that sort of telehealth. But telehealth really does go beyond just video visits. And we can get into things like remote patient management, where you're actually having the patient share data with the physician and share even task management, which is the approach that we take at Mobile Smith Health to stay adherent to a treatment protocol, to a treatment regimen. We want to make sure that that patient journey is not just communicated to the patient on a piece of paper, but interacted with the patient through this mobile smartphone, you know, and mobile technology means. So I think the notion of what telehealth is has expanded beyond just the video visit and now encompasses remote patient management and other technologies.
Yeah, I like what you're doing there, Les, because you're drawing a distinction between telehealth, which has become very much a catch-all term, remote patient management, and those are really two different things. If anything, telehealth is a subset, perhaps, of remote patient management and not the other way around, correct?
Right, yeah, and that's the way I think about it. I think of it more expansive, that remote patient management encompasses a number of technologies. It might be task management, it might be sharing of data by the patient through wearables, through home technologies that can then be shared with a provider. You know, most people think of telehealth as simply just video visits. And really, you can think of it as telehealth as more expansive. It includes remote patient monitoring. Or frankly, you could think of it the other way around as well, that remote patient monitoring is inclusive of telehealth. So it really doesn't matter, you know, which approach you take. They're kind of synonymous at this point.
It's right. almost like an under an umbrella virtual care.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, it's exactly right. It's under an umbrella of virtual care. And we need to think of it that way, that when, you know, a patient is coming in, that virtual care is not just being able to see the patient face to face through a Zoom call or through your EMR's, you know, video visit technology. But it's more than that. It's the ability for the patient to share data, the ability for the patient to participate in their own care in a connected means.
One question for you too, just, and again, not to get into the negative aspects of it, but in terms of adoption rates. So what do you think prevents some of the patients to maybe not adhere the way they should or follow protocols based on this virtual care model? Is it privacy issues, security issues, or just unfamiliarity with it right now still?
I think it's more the latter. I think it's unfamiliarity with the technology. And then you know, once you become familiar with the technology, then you start to ask the security and usability questions. Anecdotally, we are seeing from our customers, from Mobile Smith Health customers, that the uptake of their EMR patient portals is only in the realm of 50%. Now, there are some organizations who have done very, very well in that regard. And then there are some organizations that are laggards. But that's what we're seeing is approximately 50% uptake across the patient population of the EMR, be it a MyChart through Epic or what have you. And all of the EMR vendors now, because of the CARES Act and other regulations, all the EMR vendors now provide really robust patient portals and the ability to interact with their patients. But that only goes so far. It's more of a push of information as than it is a pull of information from the patient. Now that is changing, but that's really where we need to get to as an industry, is being able to pull information from the patient as opposed to just pushing test results. Here's a reminder of your next visit. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the things that we think of in a patient portal today, we need to think of that more in a bi-directional format. And I think the industry is starting to go there.
Les, I want to use the next few moments to tap into your clinical research experience. You have worked for undoubtedly one of the largest clinical research organizations in the world. And I think a lot of folks don't realize that really the patient journey in many respects starts before the patient even is diagnosed, right? It starts with novel research being done, clinical trials being executed and implemented, driving the science and then drives the treatment protocols that drives that patient journey, right? To the extent that digital adherence technologies are able to impact the treatment side of that journey, talk a little bit about the extendability of this into the clinical research realm.
Yeah, so patient adherence in the clinical research space is a huge topic. It's thought that there's a really high percentage, and I don't have it at my fingertips at the moment, but you know, a high percentage of data in a clinical trial is lost because the patient is not adherent to the treatment protocol. And it's really a frightening amount. And so organizations, biopharma in particular, are spending a lot of money focusing in on how do we keep patients adherent? How do we make sure that patients are taking their meds throughout the duration of the entire trial and are not dropping off at some point? And so you're starting to see companies that are focusing in on that. And even, you know, at Mobile Smith Health, we're talking about how can we take the patient adherence capabilities that we have in our platform and extend that into the clinical trial space. It's an interesting approach where we're taking something that is aimed at hospitals, and particularly with our Periop application aimed into the surgical space, you know, those same tasks, that same, I want to make sure that my patients are informed and are doing the things that they need to. That's transcendent across what a hospital needs, as well as what the needs of a biopharma might be. And so that's an interesting approach that we're starting to see a number of companies starting to take. And it's not just companies that are in the clinical trial space now going into, you know, population management and patient adherence in that regard, but the other way around, where companies like Mobile Smith Health are starting to look at taking our technology that is approaching population management, population health, and really starting to focus in on where we can take that technology in the clinical trial space. It's an interesting inflection point.
You're listening to Healthcare Aptitude on Healthcare Now Radio. In today's episode, we're joined by Les Jordan of Mobile Smith Health. So Les, we've had a great discussion so far on the show around the consumer impact of mobile technologies, telehealth and whatnot. But now I want to talk a little bit more about the provider side and the provider impact. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you'd mentioned some stats and how hospitals, these elective procedures and whatnot, they're critical for providers, especially already operating on these razor thin margins, right? Yep. So a hospital's ability to keep their patients compliant and adhering to protocols is critical. What's your take on that?
Yeah, and it goes beyond just compliance with the protocol. We want to make sure that patients are showing up for their surgeries. I mean, at the end of the day, that's part of what it comes down to is two things. Absolutely. One, you know, are patients showing up for their surgeries? And if they're not, why not? And non-compliance is certainly a big reason for that. You know, if you think about the fact that a surgery constitutes about 60% of the revenue of a hospital, and the cost per cancellation is around $5,200 per cancellation, that's pretty significant. And so if we can change that by making the patient more compliant with the treatment protocol leading up to it, so that patients aren't showing up and having not stopped taking their warfarin, for instance, patients are showing up prepared for their surgeries, and you don't have situations where all of a sudden you have to cancel at the last minute, which costs the hospital money. That notion of how do we make the patient more compliant in order to save the hospital money and enhance their revenues as a result is really kind of the key focus here.
You know, it's become critical throughout the pandemic, but yeah. Is this something you saw prior to it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Those numbers that I just quoted were numbers that we had generated before the pandemic. And so our thinking on this is that this is a problem in general.
Right.
I spoke with a hospital system this morning, and the hospital system was saying that they were seeing same-day cancellation rates over 10%. And that's pretty significant. And when you think about the money involved in that, how do we change that so that there's a good ROI for the hospital in addressing patient noncompliance by making sure that patients are showing up for their surgeries? And then on the flip side of that is how do we make patients compliance post-surgical procedures with the tasks mm-hmm. that need to be done so that we're avoiding readmissions? Because readmissions, especially with an ACO, certainly have a cost involved in that as well.
So let's kind of get the crystal ball out here a little bit. Where do you see the future of adherence heading? And, you know, what might it look like and what do you expect it to lead to?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. As we start to gather more data, we'll be able to do things such as predict which patients will be non-adherent with the treatment and be more proactive with those patients about giving them reminders, about giving and engaging with them, perhaps in different ways than the technology initially will provide. As we gather more data on who is non-compliant and why they're non-compliant, we can change the way that we interact with those patients. It might be looking at the social determinants of health and where a patient is at in their own life journey and being able to engage with patients differently based on those factors. But the only way you can understand that, and the only way you can get into that predictive analytics is by having that data to begin with. So really for us, we're in this data gathering mode where we're starting to understand and trying to understand why patients are non-adherent. And then from there, we can tailor the treatment pathway, as we call it. We can change that journey to interact with those patients more individually because we have the predictive analytics backing it up.
Let's dig into that a little bit deeper. Are you talking about a new definition of personalized medicine or something that is being added to the cadre of tools and tricks that are in the personalized medicine bag?
You know, it's interesting. When we talked about personalized medicine 15 years ago, we talked about getting a Bruce Kennedy pill or a Les Jordan pill based on our DNA and based on our conditions that there would be one treatment or a set of treatments that were really tailored to us, right? That's changed, I think, and people are thinking about it more expansively, where now we can think about technology playing a role in that personalized medicine. And so it's about approaching the patient where they are in their life journey, in their health, and not just having this cookie cutter, one size fits all kind of approach to it. So yes, I do think that this is kind of a more expansive notion of personalized medicine. How do we approach the patient? And in what ways can we tailor our messaging? In what ways can I tailor our communications so that they are directed at the patient in a more personal fashion?
And Les, I think that given the ability for mobile to collect an amazing amount of data, whether it's through the mobile phone device or smartwatch or another IoT-based device, combined with patient-reported outcomes through kind of an app like ours, are you thinking from the perspective of funneling all of that data into the predictive analytics model? I mean, does it get that expansive or am I putting together unlike items?
No. It does get that more expansive. The more data you have, the more likely you are to find and make inferences that you wouldn't have been able to catch otherwise. If I'm wearing my Apple Watch and I'm capturing the ECG on a regular basis, and you notice that my heart rate is going up with exercise, for instance, you can start to get a correlation between exercise and heart rate. Well, that's pretty well understood. But then if I then come back and I have that correlation between heart rate and exercise, and that also happens to be when I'm missing taking my pills is because I'm exercising at that same time. Well, then, you know, that correlation between the two, that might be something that a predictive analytics could pick up on and say, hey, you know, we noticed that you're exercising during the time that you should be taking your pills. You know, perhaps we should change the time that we're sending you a reminder to take your pill. And, you know, it's that sort of thing that until we start gathering that level of data, we just don't know what we're going to find.
We've now kind of weighed into the we're gathering a ton of data discussion. So the bookend to that is let's talk a little bit about privacy, because one of the interesting notions of a mobile device and collecting that level of data is, hey, you know, we also can collect location data, right? So we can know when you're having an event, not just what type of event you're having, if it's a medical event, but we can also know where you are, right? So as we are looking at that level of information, some might look at that as being maybe intrusive. Talk a little bit about those elements and the privacy aspect of this.
Well, first of all, in our app today, we're not capturing any location information. You know, we are capturing and we do have on our plans to be able to capture information from wearables, but those are mostly around health and not necessarily location. So there are some things that you have to consider when you think about privacy. First of all, we have the notion of regulatory compliance. So we do have HIPAA compliance, GDPR, you know, those things that we can focus in on from a regulatory compliance space. Is your data encrypted at rest? Is your data encrypted in transit? Is your data encrypted throughout the entire process? We want to make sure that we're making the data so that it is safe for the patient to be able to share that information with their provider. And at MobileSmith Health and most other companies that are approaching this, we approach it in that fashion, that we're making sure that the data is safe. But then there's the aspect of, well, just how much data are you collecting and what types of data are you collecting? So for us, as I said before, we're not collecting any information on location, but we are collecting information on when are you completing tasks? What tasks are you completing? And then we're also looking at how do we correlate that with information from your wearables? When are you exercising? What is your heart rate? You know, what's your O2 level? What's your blood pressure? What's your weight? All of those things come into play as well. So it's a balancing act between trying to capture information for the purposes of improving patient compliance and patient health versus balancing that out against exactly what information do we really need, as opposed to what information would be a little too much to be capturing.
As we begin to kind of bring these multiple channels of this conversation together, there's clearly a nexus point between adherence and predictive analytics and the future. Let's talk about the marriage of those two things and where we go.
Yeah, so when we think about the future of adherence, it kind of ties everything that we've talked about together and starts to think about not just did the patient complete a task on time, but also starting to think about will a patient complete a task on time? And how can we engage with that patient in a more proactive fashion where we're not just giving them a treatment reminder or we're not just giving them a task reminder, but it's actually more proactive and saying from the back end, we're thinking, hey, this patient might be more susceptible to missing medications. So how can we proactively reach out to that patient and perhaps give them reinforcing messages? It's important for you to take your medication for you to be healthy. It's important for you to take your medication for you to engage with your family better. It's important for you to take your medication in order to keep your job. You know, all of these things kind of roll into it. And it's really important from a patient adherence standpoint that we're not just being reactive, but we are thinking about things in a proactive fashion. That's really where predictive analytics comes in and being able to think with all of this data that we now have around patients, we can now get to the point where we know which patients have been in the past adherent. Now we can predict which patients aren't going to be adherent in the future, and we can approach them in a different way.
Les, as I knew it would be, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And before we go, we want to remind or you let our listeners know really that they can download free of charge Les's white paper, A Triple Threat, How Mobile Apps Can Boost Productivity, Revenues and Patient Engagement. They can get that on beckershospitalreview.com. Just take a look under the white paper tab and you'll find Les's white paper. And I'll also tweet out the link via my Twitter handle @Tom_Testa. And Les, did you want to maybe share your Twitter handle too for tweeting that out?
So my Twitter handle is @LJRDN3. People are more than welcome to reach out to me through that fashion.
Folks, that's all we have time for. Be sure to join us next month as we investigate more about the use of mobile apps in healthcare. Remember to catch the show on Healthcare Now Radio every weekday at 7 a.m., 3 p.m., and 11 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, visit www.mobilesmith.com. Send your questions to sales@mobilesmith. And once again and always, thank you for listening and be well.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Healthcare Aptitude, sponsored by MobileSmith Health. Be sure to tune in weekdays at 7 a.m., 3 p.m., and 11 p.m. Eastern Time on Healthcare Now Radio.